where the season's pretty much over. Wouldn't you say so, Matt F., Matt P.?
Yep. That's why we spent the past hour talking about weird baseball reference names and not the Yankees.
Yeah, and we're going to have a feature on that later on this podcast. But for now, we will reluctantly discuss the New York Yankees American League Baseball Club.
We have to.
Well, maybe a little bit. We can talk about bright spots. Like, there are a few left. We should give a shout-out to Dylan Betances. He broke Mariano Rivera's relief strikeout record with 132 now. So he is good at this baseball thing.
That was cool, but the fact that came in a meaningless game in the trap is very 2014.
Oh, yeah. And also Brandon McCarthy's immaculate inning. Another thing that just kind of happened, and I heard like the Rays broadcaster say, 3 up, 3 down, 9 pitches, strikeouts. I'm like, wait, what? That happened? Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if that was, like, this game mattered at all. It would be kind of funny. It's like, whoa, he did that. But it's like, oh, huh.
Well, it's pretty big for McCarthy, especially because he's, like, waiting to sign in free agency. Like, this type of stuff is going to help him a lot. Mm-hmm. And he will definitely get a contract because of this half season.
Yeah, I think we talked about it on this podcast before. Yankees really need to re-sign Brandon McCarthy.
Yes, please. Please do.
Please. Please, Antifa.
Or at least hire him and, like, make him tweet.
Yes, that would... Yeah, just him and his wife just tweet for the Yankees. Mm-hmm. They just run the social media.
They take over the Yankees Twitter account and start... They start tweeting at each other, like the Cespedes Family Barbecue people on the Yankees Twitter account.
If they re-sign him, I'd kind of be like that commercial, the kid with the Nintendo 64...
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just because it's kind of a no-brainer. He's not expensive. Like, he's been good. He's like, I think he's a great, I personally think he's a great, like, clubhouse type of guy. He's a great personality. He has a great makeup. Like, he fits New York really well. It's like, do it. Get her done.
Yeah, and the nice thing is that, like, unlike some of the other starters on the market, like, he wouldn't cost any, like, draft picks or anything because he's right on the team, so, you know.
Yeah. Yep. I endorse it.
Mm-hmm. Later on, I'm sure we'll have like a more in-depth podcast about like people that are coming to be free agents, and we can talk about that. But for now, all we really want is to see Brandon McCarthy re-sign. We'll worry about the other free agent starters later.
Yeah, if they even want to go that route.
Yeah.
You could argue they could make a piecemeal rotation from what they have. I wouldn't want them to fully, but they could definitely make that case.
Here's an interesting question that I debated with former PSA writer Jesse on Twitter the other day about. Would you rather them sign a guy this offseason who will cost a conditional pick? Or would you rather them just say, forget it, just not sign anyone that would cost a pick? Because they're going to be picking in like the middle of the first round, probably. It's a matter of like who the player is, but like if they want to get like a JJ Hardy to play shortstop for them, then he's going to cost a conditional pick. They want like Scherzer or Shields, they'll cost conditional picks. Lester won't, but
Matt F, you can start.
I wouldn't care if they lost the pick that much. Like, obviously I'd want it the pick, but I'd rather improve the team first. So if that's what it takes, then yeah, give up the pick.
Yeah, it's really complicated because I feel like it's more so the attitude is more like the tragedy of the commons type of thing. Like, 1 year deciding not to take the pick is not going to hurt you at all. But if you do it for 10 years straight, it's going to hurt you significantly.
Mm-hmm. And they just did this last year, so.
Yeah, so it's definitely how, like, I feel like you can't do it every year, but at the same time, you can't, like, just not make the team better immediately. And J.J. Hardy's going to make the team better. I personally think they're going to go after Lester because I think they want the draft pick again, especially if they're going to get the middle of the first round. Like, I think they do want the draft pick because, I mean, like, when George Steinbrenner was in control, like, in the 80s, they never had a first-round draft pick ever. And I think Brian Cashman likes the first round draft pick a lot, and I think Oppenheimer likes that first round draft pick. So I think they're going to try to shoot for it. And it really depends on the strength of the draft class. I've been hearing a lot of rumblings that there's like some more bats in this draft class, and it's not as pitcher heavy, which is huge. So I don't know. It really depends on what they're thinking for the draft and what they feel and really what they value in like a dollar value, what that pick is going to be.
Yeah.
That has to be put in as sort of a discount rate to whatever they're putting into the player.
Yeah. Another thing to factor is that because they, you know, spent so much on the international free agent market this year, they're not going to bring in like anything next international signing period. So maybe they'll say like, well, we need to bring in some youth, so maybe we should hold on to this pick. And I mean, it's just one guy as opposed to like a bunch of 16 or 17 year olds. Or maybe they'll rest on their laurels and be like, well, we already pulled in a huge number of guys last July from that international signing period. So maybe they'll view it like, well, we already got like someone who might have been comparable to like a mid first round pick. But I don't know. Yeah. It seems like they would probably want that pick, but obviously we have no idea what Brian Cashman's thinking. So.
But the thing is the way that they could structure it is they could structure the draft similar to the way they did this year. Because this year, like, the strategy was, like, we know we're not getting a first-round pick who's obviously going to be higher ceiling, lower floor. Let's just get the guy with the highest floor possible. And they picked Lindgren in the second round, who's pretty much the closest player to the big league level of anyone drafted, pretty much, in terms of, you know, ability. So they could try something like that, where they find a guy who's just, like, an incredibly high floor who can make an immediate impact and then get their return on investment immediately. To make up for the fact they don't have a first-round pick. So it depends. And it looks like they're shifting more towards college picks than they are towards high school guys. So
yeah, except for Ian Clarkin. But yep. I think he was like,
yes,
Ian Clarkin, he was really polished, I think, as a prep prospect. So.
He was. But yeah. I think in general they're leaning towards more polished college bats like Judge and Jagielo and even college pitchers. They're just lower risk. And I think the Yankees know they're not going to get, like, the first overall pick in the first round. So they're better off. Like, the Cardinals do that. They pick, like, a lot of college pitchers because they're easily projectable and you can get an easy return on investment. And I think that's what the Yankees are going to try to do and play to their strengths.
And I think one of the problems is that, like, recently they've been burned so much on high school guys. Like, obviously they were reach picks, so that didn't help. But, like, Cito Culver, Dante Bichette Jr., Andrew Brackman was a college pick, but they drafted him knowing that he needed Tommy John surgery or some major surgery, like, immediately.
Yep.
That didn't help. Slade Heath got to, another high school guy they picked early. So
yeah, these guys are, like, and Mason Williams is another one who is, like, they pick these guys with, like, incredibly, like, high ceilings with a lot of raw tools, but they're not polished at all. And the thing is, if you're a team that knows that you're, I think they don't want to admit that their development system has some problems. Because if you're, like, totally aware that the team is not good at developing players, you should be like, all right, so if we know we're not good at that, let's just try to pick guys who require the least amount of development possible. If we know, because some teams, like, are very confident that they can change guys' ways and, like, develop them correctly. And other teams are like, nah, we're not very good at that. So I think they have to kind of play to their strengths in that sense. Like, they're not that great at developing, turning these guys out of nowhere. They don't really do that often. So they're better off just finding guys who are, like, close to the big league level who they can kind of nudge along, and then they have an amazing coaching staff at the big league level to help them. I think that should be their strategy.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting, yep, that, like, with these low-ceiling guys that, you know, they had that great – all these great outfielders coming up at the same time, and, like, Mason Williams, Slade Heathcott, Tyler Austin, and yet it seems like the only one – left that might have a shot at cracking the big leagues is Austin. He had the lowest ceiling of the ball.
Yeah.
So it's just,
I mean,
kind of funny that way.
Yeah, I think some teams get too caught up in the idea of the ceiling when, like, it's like a real myth because, like, every player has an AD ceiling. Like, every player could be the greatest player in the world because even some great players were drafted, like, in the 35th round.
Or, like, Mike Piazza.
Yeah, like Mike Piazza. Yeah, so the thing is, like, every player is an 80 ceiling if you want them to be. Guys like Jose Bautista could pop out of nowhere, so it's hard to try to pin your hopes on guys with, like, these ridiculously raw tools that require so much work. when there are guys like Lindgren who you can kind of just like put them on a track and just be like, okay, just pitch.
Mark Burley, 38th round pick.
Yeah, I mean, they're rare, obviously. Oh, yeah. But,
sure.
The point being that you're better off going for guys who are easily projectable, because even going from 18 to 22 is such a huge difference. Trying to project, like looking at an 18-year-old and saying, oh, what are they going to play like when they're 25, 26? I don't even know what size they're going to be, like how they're going to grow into their body. How mature are they? Most of these guys, like, they've never faced any type of adversity in their life. Like, they've never had any problems playing baseball. So, like, when they first play, like, difficult baseball, it becomes very difficult for them. And, like, a lot of teams don't know that. Look at Mark Appel, like, had a lot of problems dealing with injuries and adversity and new difficulties. And, like, Astros have never seen that before when they drafted him, because they would have never known. So it becomes very difficult.
So, well, yeah, that's our tangent on the pick versus signing free agent debate. I think they'd be able to do it without giving up the pick, but I don't know. It depends on, like, how they want to approach the shortstop situation.
That would be preferable, but
I guess, yeah. I guess we'll just have to wait and see on that. But one another amusing thing. So we were talking about some bright spots this week. We talked about McCarthy. We talked about Dellin, and also Chris Young. What?
Shh! Let it happen.
It's like the Ibanez thing. Only team that's crap.
Yeah.
It would have really been a fun story if, like, they were, you know, relevant.
It was cool. Yeah. Like he'll work himself into the debate for fifth outfield spot or something.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and again, like, I don't care about giving him a spring training invite, just as long as they don't take this as some sort of referendum on Kevin Long turned his swing around, or he still has a spark left, let's give him a major league contract.
Yeah, no.
Your deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could see a team giving him a 1-year deal or a minor league contract. Or, I mean, he did get $7 million over, you know, last year.
Of course, that was after, like, a better year when he was on the A's.
Yes, but it still happened. It could be an outlier, but it did happen.
Well, it was fun. But when I bring up Kevin Long, that brings up another thing I was thinking about the other day. I don't like to ever be the fan to say, like, fire the hitting coach, fire the pitching coach, because, like, we don't know, like, what exactly goes on behind the scenes. But it feels like there's going to have to be some accountability for the team being dead last in the American League in runs. I don't know. And with, like, a lineup that's been mostly healthy all year, so I don't know. I'm kind of over the whole Kevin Long experience.
I mean, I don't really care. It could honestly be, like, some fool as the hitting coach, and, like, it probably wouldn't make – I mean, it probably would make some difference, but we don't have any way to evaluate him. And, yeah, I agree. They'll probably fire him, and, like, fans will get all happy and, like, think that – and then, like, when things go bad again, then who do you blame?
New hitting coach.
Then it's, like, burn down the stadium. Like, what comes next? You know, you start blaming people. Other people, because, like, I think that it really what it boils down to is people had unrealistic expectations about how good the hitting was going to be to begin with.
Yeah, but I mean, again, I think, the thing is, like, even with the unrealistic expectations, you expected them to be better than dead last.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I will say that I think that he will be fired, and it will be for no other reason than for the Yankees to save face and basically blame him as a scapegoat.
Someone has to make some sort of change.
I think him and Thompson will get fired. That I would be happy about, because that's pretty objectively, you can see he's doing a bad job. It doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure out that, like, yeah, he's doing a bad job. But Kevin Long, I couldn't even tell you, because, like, the only way you could legitimately rank hitting coaches, and this is crude, is you, like, take them, the preseason projections that the players had, and compare them to what they actually were, and then do that for every team they ever were the hitting coach of for every year. And I bet it probably would not be that, like, huge.
Probably not.
Because the thing is, like, players are always making adjustments, and hitting coaches are always adjusting people's swing. So, like, it's always constant, like, this tug and pull between pitchers and hitters and pitching coaches and hitting coaches. Like, it's very hard to peg, like, because the thing is, for every hot streak or cold streak, there's always, like, some weird explanation as to why it happened. Like, oh, he changed his swing, or, you know, he wasn't seeing the ball well, or he was distracted, or some baloney that's, like, usually made up. So, but it's usually just as a way of explaining the unexplainable. And I think that Kevin Long being fired is just going to be a way to explain something that people just don't want to explain, to saying they were just bad, or it was just randomly bad. You know, that's not really acceptable for a lot of people. So, yeah, he'll get fired, but I don't know if it'll actually do anything.
I mean, the only time you really hear about adjustments is when, like, a player has a mini hot streak after working with the hitting coach, and then if they, like, go back into a slump 2 weeks later, you don't hear about the adjustments anymore.
Nope.
Yeah, of course. It was, like, the thing with Brian McCann and, like, the toe tap or whatever.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we got the toe tap thing working, then...
I mean, he's gonna end the season, like, not horribly, like, it'll be but...
Yeah, but it took, until August for him to, like, start hitting, and even now, he's only been, like, okay, still not quite exactly the McCann we were exactly hoping for.
Yeah, exactly, and how much can you blame Kevin Long for that? Mm-hmm. I mean...
It's just a matter of, like, unfortunately, someone eventually has to go, otherwise, I agree that, like... Obviously, the hitting coach is not the sole cause of, like, the Yankees being terrible at offense. But you can't also have the same standpoint that, like, well, it probably doesn't make a difference because then he's just going to be the coach forever. So,
yes, exactly. But the thing is that, like I said, that's something that, like, they would be able to assess way better than we would be able to.
Yeah.
Because, like, they would see. Their analytics department, like, I wish we had hit effects, which we don't. And I can guarantee they see certain, like... Cashman was able to pick up when Headley's hit velocity went up in San Diego when he, like, got healthy, and that's why they got him.
Hit velo.
Like, hashtag hit velo. But I'm sure, like, when Kevin Long makes an adjustment, they obviously look at the hit effects to, like, see if this has an actual change.
Mm-hmm. And maybe like, there is an actual change or something. But it seems like it's been a while since we actually saw someone, like, make a big, like, change for the better under Long, other than, like, Brett Gardner recently and Curtis Granderson, like, four years ago.
Granderson? Yeah.
It's just funny because, like, when the Yankees were hitting like crazy, Kevin Long had, like, it was almost like a victory tour for him, like, how great he was working with the hitters and how many adjustments he was making and getting people out of slumps. And, like, I think, again, that was more explained by, like, it was more of, like, how good the players were.
And yeah, like, it's like, well, you kind of had a lineup that had, like, A-Rod, Curtis Granderson, Jeter.
Nick Swisher.
Good Mark Teixeira.
Oh, yeah, Mark Teixeira before he missed Mark Teixeira.
So it was very easy for him to take credit. And I think that's a lot of what it is. It's like, a hitting coach takes credit for good and for bad. And I think a smart team looking for a better hitting coach would see Kevin Long and be like, yeah, he was a scapegoat. Let's bring him in because he's clearly pretty good.
Well, it's like the Yankees fired Dave Island, and then he was hired thereafter by, I think, the Rays, and then the Royals hired him. So,
yeah. So I mean, there are some bad ones. Like, Ron Guidry was not a good pitching coach at all.
No, I'm pretty sure he was just hired because, like, oh, yeah, he was a guy.
Yeah, he was a good pitcher. That means he's a good coach, right?
Oh boy, yeah.
I mean, I can understand. Like, they eventually parted ways with Mel Stottlemyre. Like,
Mel Stottlemyre resigned because he.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Steinbrenner. Just the same way that Zimmer resigned.
That's right. There was that thing.
It's almost like he had a way of driving people away.
If only the boss was here.
If only the boss were alive, he would be riffing people in the press, and I'm sure, like, some percent of the Yankee fan population would be like, yeah, but, like, no. Well, we better not get into it if the boss were alive tangent.
If the boss were alive, they would have won the World Series twice this year already.
You're a touche. They would be the 9-time defending champions. And Derek Jeter would not be hitting 250. He would be hitting Three fady. You're getting a number that's not even real. Those are all the topics that I had. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
I don't think there's anything to talk about with this team. It's like,
yeah, it was just a miserable week.
Not really.
I mean, I didn't.
Shane Green was good. That was it.
Michael Pineda was good. Brandon McCarthy was good today. But again, the story is just the same over and over again. Good pitching, awful hitting. And there's that one over the weekend with the whole David Robertson thing, pitching 3 days in a row, which that didn't really work out.
Yeah.
But whatever. I was already at the point where it's like, you know, they're so far back anyway that it's almost not going to make a difference unless they win, like, every game, and they clearly weren't going to do that, so.
No. I thought maybe the most realistic thing is they would win, like, five in a row just to tease everybody.
Oh, yeah, like on the last podcast, we were guessing, like, how close they would get, and I said that they would even get the two games within the wild card, and even looking back, that was way too optimistic. They're 5 games out now, I think, but
it's pretty much, it's the equivalent of 100 games out at this point.
Oh, yeah, because there's only, like, 12 games left, so, like, and they're behind, like, 3 or 4 teams right now or something, so.
They would have to win every single game.
Yeah, and hope that the other teams, like, really fall back, so, yeah, it's not even a thing. Ugh. But I guess
there's some weird, bizarre universe where it does happen, though, and I don't know how I'd react.
Well, there's also some weird, bizarre universe where the Mets do that, too, I think. Because they're not officially eliminated.
Yeah, they would, like, finish, like, almost at 500, like, pretty much.
Well, I guess tip of our hat to the Orioles, I guess, for winning the division. As Greg has said over and over, they were clearly the better team all year. Which is weird.
Yes, yep. And better teams deserve to win the division, and they haven't won a division in a very long time, so.
Yeah, but I also, it's like, yay, good for you, I guess. Well, yeah, ran a brief playoff tangent, but maybe we'll talk about that a little bit more when they're actually getting started. For now, I guess we'll move on to the tweet bag. Most don't have too much in the tweet bag this week. Then we'll move on to the BRF segment. So, tweet bag, first question from longtime listener. Could Superman have saved this team? How about Batman? What are your guys' thoughts?
I'm going to say,
I think
that Batman's contract would definitely be huge, though.
Yeah, maybe. He does have a lot of equipment to make it work.
Yes. They'd have to fund his Batmobile.
What do you think, Batf?
Maybe Superman, put him at short instead of Jeter.
Yeah.
That might have worked.
Oh, well, you know what? I remember
now. I feel like he probably has range.
Yeah, that's true. I remember now, a couple months back, Jason did that post on, like, Superman saving Yankee Stadium. So, Superman.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I think that actually the most useful superhero for saving the Yankee season would be the Flash.
John Flaherty.
Because all he would have to... Yes, he would hit a grand slam against the Red Sox. Because all the Flash would have to do is just make contact. That's it. Just make contact with the ball and get it in foul territory, and then he would immediately score.
Well, fair territory.
Yes, I mean, that's what I mean. In fair territory, and then he would just score.
He'll just foul bunts. That'll be great. Yeah,
like the RBI baseball thing play where he bunted and managed to score.
Yeah, it's like the ultimate troll move. So maybe that's the answer. Maybe the Flash or Superman or Batman. Though
John Flaherty.
Yeah, or John Flaherty. I mean, he's a hitting expert.
giving one of his token hitting lessons.
All right, next question from Sean McNeil. What was your favorite alcoholic beverage to dull the pain of crappy Yankee baseball? I mean, I check in all my beers on Untappd, so just check that.
I choose absinthe.
Yes.
Hand sanitizer.
Yes. Yeah, just straight into the palm and just lick it up. Also, yep. Can't be without Bleach, the official sponsor of the 2014 New York Yankees. Oh my god.
Bleacher Report.
Oh god. Slideshows of a man drinking bleach. Alright, next question from one of my favorite Pinstripe Alley members, Ebenezer Splooge. If a Yankee did a commercial, which Yankee would best convince you to buy their product? That's a good question.
I still don't have a forged edge, so probably not Jeter.
No. But he has that panoramic Mr. Roof.
As train plays.
Okay. I think Brendan Ryan actually would be the best one.
What makes you say that?
Because I feel like if they did a commercial with Brendan Ryan, he would just do all of his impressions. And he would just, like, be different. Like, I could see him, like, being different people in the same commercial, but doing different impressions.
True.
Yeah, like, I could totally see that. Like, I don't know, maybe for, like...
He has, he could probably, like...
Yeah, he has a wide range of
impressions. With all the range he has, he could probably, like, do a variety of products.
Well, I mean, he's not busy. He's just on the bench. So, I mean, he has plenty of time to do a commercial.
Well, apparently now he's the full-time second baseman. Second baseman, not shortstop, because, I think, for me, it would be Dylan Betances, because he's a tall dude, and he's awesome, and he's like, buy this, I'd be like, yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Who would be your player, Meta?
I don't know. I feel like, Mark Teixeira, because, like, my sense of humor is very random, so I feel like you'd like a stupid commercial, and I'd like... Oh, yeah, I'll go do that.
I feel like he would have to do it in, like, not like regular Mark Teixeira, in foul territory with Mark Teixeira. Be like, yes, yes.
Oh, actually, now that I think about that, I've never had, like, this juice press thing, so never mind.
But see, that's Mark Teixeira as Mark Teixeira, not Mark Teixeira as foul territory with Mark Teixeira.
Yeah. I would endorse that version of him.
Yeah, okay. John Ryan Murphy, because he's clearly made quite a living in the oil business, so whatever he like thinks is a good investment is fine with me.
That is fair. Yeah, I'm an oil man.
Yeah, he's just like Daniel Day-Lewis in There Will Be Blood.
Yes. You know, I feel like I'm probably well past the point where I should Photoshop him into like a There Will Be Blood scene.
Yeah. Something about a milkshake.
Get that Daniel Day-Lewis mustache on him.
Yes. I've abandoned my boy.
Alright. Alright, next question. From Blanky. A couple questions. With 2014 being such a disappointing year for the Yankees, how do you find optimism for 2015?
I'm fairly optimistic about sports in general, so just naturally I'm going to be optimistic, but as far as actual, like, reasons to be, I mean, they're probably going to sign a couple people. That should help.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I try to stay on, like, the optimistic side as well, just because, like, I mean, it's sort of been, like, kind of the blessing growing up as a Yankees fan. You could always go into the season expecting something good. And I think that's just a good vantage point to have anyway, because, like, on opening day, no one has any losses. And... even if your team is terrible on paper, you can go out there and have like an incredible season, like the 2012 Orioles did. So,
yeah, definitely,
yeah. Yep. I generally have an optimistic nature about it, and I think
baseball is a weird sport.
Yeah, well, you can't predict baseball season, but I will. My optimism will be incredibly buoyed if Masahiro Tanaka is healthy.
Yes, definitely, yeah. I agree. Yeah, but I think generally staying optimistic is just fun. Like, why would you even watch sports if you're not optimistic to begin with? If you're just like, I'm going to watch this game and root for someone, but they're going to lose anyway.
Well, see, now you're just in the mind of Mariners fans for the past 14 years.
True, but yeah, I'm generally optimistic. Because the thing is, like, baseball is so random, and I think I would be less optimistic if this was, like, 1990. and it was like you have to win a division or you don't get in the playoffs. But now with like all these wild cards and like all this randomness and with all the competitive balance, it's kind of just like literally anything could happen, and it's just very, very random. I mean, generally speaking, there are certain like very rare, like the Astros, I don't think are going to win 100 games. But like if you're in that region, like near 500, like you could, anything could really happen from there.
That's true.
You could just have a good streak of 10 games, and like all of a sudden you're a night. Like, think of like the Brewers should not even be close to the playoffs, and they're kind of fading out of it, but like they were pretty much in it for the whole season because they had like a couple of good weeks in April.
Yep. So, yeah, we find ways, and it'll also be good if like they sign McCarthy, as we said before. So. You know, I'm just saying. All right. Next question. Do you like bench clearing brawls? If so, do you have a favorite? I mean, I don't. I think they're pretty stupid.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean, the ones that have happened.
I prefer my team not getting them.
Yeah, I prefer the team not getting them because people can get hurt, and it's mostly over like machismo. Like, I'm gonna throw a baseball at you because you pimped a home run. That seems justified, but. I think my favorite, some of my favorite brawls are the ones where like there's like all this anger, you know, the bullpens come out and then nothing happens. They just kind of like stare at each other and then walk away.
Yep.
Yeah. See, I don't like the bench clearing brawls at all, especially when they're about really, really dumb things. Because it's machismo. It's like about this like maintaining this idea of masculinity in the face of adversity and like maintaining a face of strength, and like it doesn't look that way, it just looks stupid.
Yep.
The only time that it's interesting, I think the only time that I've ever given an exception to it is like the Yankees Red Sox in like 2004 and 2005, because like it very rarely had to do with something like that. It was just like they were in a brawl, like the fight itself for the division was like a brawl. And like every single game was just so heightened and tense that it kind of had drama to it. But it's not just like, the Orioles are playing, you know, some, or like the Pirates are playing the Royals or something random like that. And like someone hits somebody, now they're angry. Like, that's stupid.
Yeah.
I don't like them, but if it's part of the narrative, I guess it's better as long as nobody gets hurt, because you don't want anyone to get hurt.
In retrospect, the 98 one is amusing, but I'm sure like if that happened now, I'd just be like tearing my hair out. Like, no, you guys are going to get hurt or suspended. Stop, please.
Yeah. No, yeah. They do get bonus points for punching Armando Benitez. That's always a plus.
Yeah, yeah, that's okay.
All right. Also, in retrospect, the Don Zimmer brawl gets points for weirdness.
That was the weirdest thing ever.
Like, what the hell is Zimmer doing? He's like almost 80 and he's rushing at Pedro Martinez. And like, people were furious at Pedro Martinez then. But, like, what is he supposed to do? Like, he has to, like, defend himself, but, like, he's an old man, so.
See, those brawls, I mean, like, I didn't even know how to, like, view that. I was, like, 9 years old. I was, like, 9, 10 years old. I was, like, what is going on? Like, why is this old man getting thrown to the ground?
I was just surreal.
See, that stuff had, like, a drama attached to it associated with the rivalry and, like, the drama around that, you know, the fight for the pennant.
Yep.
A lot of these fights, like bottom barrel, like basement dwelling teams that are just fighting with each other, it just looks sleazy.
Okay. And last question from Craig. Why must I be like that? Why must I chase that cat? And the answer is rough, rough, rough.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. All right. There's always one Greg question like that.
Yep. All right. So now we can move on to Matt F's B-Ref segment. We'll have another B-Ref segment after this, actually. But for now, put it over to Matt F. He can tell us about what he did this week.
Well, the second one I was going to do is a game of weird September call-ups in the history of baseball. Mm-hmm. See if you guys suggest if they're real or someone I've made up. Okay. So as I just said, I looked up several... Actually, I shouldn't say September call-ups. What I did was I looked for people who only play, like, a handful of games, but I didn't check whether actually September or not, so that's kind of cheating, but... Oh well.
deal with it.
So, okay.
First one, we'll start with Andrew and Vance Lovelace.
Vance Lovelace? I'm going to say... I'm going to say real.
Yeah, he's real. I'm trying to load up his Europe page now, but...
Yeah, he's an exec for the Dodgers, actually.
Really?
Is he?
Yeah, he's the vice president of player personnel.
Good for you, Vance Lovelace.
And he went to the same high school as Dwight Gooden and Gary Sheffield. The more you know.
Loading for me, but it... Yeah, his page is a loading, but I believe he was like the 16th pick. No, now it's going.
Yeah, you're right. Well.
He also used to be director of pro scouting for, it was also for the Dodgers.
All right.
Okay, second one. Matt P is, okay, we'll go with Nate Toot.
That sounds fake.
It's real. His name's not actually Toot, it's Toit, but...
It's funnier, it's Toot.
It's, yeah.
No, he's not gonna deal with that.
How is Toit spelled?
T-E-U-T. He was a pitcher for the Marlins for...
Okay. Yeah, there's a whole article, Get to Know Nate Toot. There he is, I see him.
Was it written by his
mother? Oh my god, his Get to Know page looks like one of those things that you'd make when you're like 5 years old.
Oh my god, you're right.
It's like, here's a picture of Michael Jordan that I put in and I liked. And it says, I'm afraid of peas, lima beans, and anything without legs.
Scroll to the bottom of the page and you'll see it's like, I never look over that, my cell phone. And then it's like...
And Traveler, a.k.a. Rhodey, and it's like a stock image of a cell phone.
A really old cell phone, too.
And then in the International Rock, Paper, Scissor contest, you'd throw paper, 95% effective, 100% of the time.
And what reality show would you be on? Temptation Island?
And then the creepiest one is...
That's creepy, I don't know.
The creepiest one is best dresser on the staff, our sales intern, Lena.
Oh my god! That's terrifying.
Oh no.
Nate, do it. Go away. Nate, do it.
Lena can just scare him away with lima beans.
Yeah, that's true. Man. Alright. Next.
Okay, Andrew. How about Lance Looper?
That sounds fake.
It is. I thought Lance was a funny name, and then I remembered Braden Looper.
Yeah, I was thinking of Braden Looper, too. Okay.
So yeah, he is not real. I wish he was, though. I feel like he would be like a middle reliever, unlike...
Like Lance Pendleton. Former Yankee great.
Okay. Alright, for Matt P., Sap Randall.
Sap Randall? That sounds fake.
Oh, that is a real person.
Well, where you know?
I can't get the stupid page to load, but can't confirm he is real.
He played in the 80s, is that what it was?
80s. Yeah, for the White Sox. For
Sap Randall.
For a whole 4 games.
It's funny because when you Google like SAP White Sox, like one of the first things that comes up is like is for Spanish audio for SAP.
Now I'm just thinking of hot girls and trying to speak in Spanish.
And then saying something racist.
Oh boy.
Okay, let's go. Well, Dangerfield.
What Dangerfield?
Dale
Dangerfield. Sounds fake.
Rodney's brother.
Yeah, that one's too obvious. It's fake.
Yeah.
God, I wish he was real. That's like a backup first baseman for the A's.
There are 5 people named Dale Dangerfield in the United States.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Yes. 3 of them are in California, 1 in North Carolina, 1 in South Carolina. In case there are any Dale Dangerfields out there, we know where you live.
Can we have one on the podcast?
Yeah, I can find their profile on White Pages. One of them is from North Carolina. I'll give him a call.
All right, for Matt P, Joe Joseph.
That sounds real.
No. Oh. Yeah, that's fake. I made that one up mainly because I was like those names where it's like Matt Mathewson.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Joe Joseph is an American football defensive end who was, I think, arrested. Well, yeah.
Hasn't these days.
There you go.
Yep, when I googled Joe Joseph, he's a, I saw his mugshot come up first.
Oh.
He was arrested for DUI.
Yeah, it's not good, but I suppose that's not as bad as some of the other ones this week.
No, yeah.
All right. So, next up, Andrew. Craig Smagstraw.
You know, that's ludicrous enough that I think it's real. I don't think you can make up Smagstra.
Yeah, it's real, and I couldn't pronounce the name. It's Smagstrla.
Wow.
Played 8 games for the Astros.
There you go.
For the left, that's Pat Strange.
What's his name? Pat Strange?
Yes.
I'm going to guess fake, because that sounds like something you can make up.
No, he is a Met. He was a former Met. In 02 and 03.
Say, Pat Strange. There he is. He was the Gatorade Massachusetts Baseball Player of the Year in 1997-1998.
Second round pick?
His Wikipedia page is actually pretty long for someone so minor.
In 2002, in 5 games, 1.13 ERA, 3.72 ERA plus. Next year, 2003, 11 ERA and 9 innings with a 40 ERA plus.
That's a minus.
Oh. In those 9 innings, in the second year, he had 11 walks per 9.
Yeah, it said that he had a career-ending bone spur surgery.
That's no good.
That's what doomed his career. Because he's only 34 now.
Yeah. Well, that's all I have for weird. Potentially call-ups.
Okay. Well, so that's the BREF segment. We have a bonus BREF segment this week where we're going to do our own take on the Cespedes Family Barbecue Barbacast, their game with baseball reference names. And we've dug up a few names on baseball reference of our own. We're each going to name 2. And it's pretty much just for our personal amusement, but hopefully you find these names as amusing as we do, because there are some pretty crazy names on baseball reference, and I highly recommend listening to the Barbacast if you want to hear some more. But so, we've pulled up some names. We'll start with Matt F. We go one at a time.
All right, so the first person I picked is from Millville, New Jersey, the hometown of Mike Trout.
I've heard of him.
Yes, he played for the Louisville Colonels, the Philadelphia Athletics, and the Brooklyn Superbas. The Superbase.
Super Bass.
He was not good. He played a whole 43 games. Career OPS plus a 51.
Oof.
But he was a man of industry, multiple ones, because his name was Farmer Steelman.
Wow. Maybe he grew robots.
Farmer Steel Man.
Like it.
Yeah, it's a good one.
All right. Move on to Matt P.
Okay, my player, he was born May 12th, 1862 in Louisville, Connecticut. Not Connecticut, Kentucky.
I was going to say.
Yeah, I was like, no. He died in Louisville, Kentucky. He played there his whole life. He played for the Louisville Colonels, and then he also played for the St. Louis Browns from 1882 to 1892, and he was actually pretty good. He accumulated 18.3 WAR in his career, but he had an extremely weird nickname named after a food. Right. Yeah, so his Sabre Bio Project says that his manager told them to have a light meal before the game before so that they wouldn't be all bogged down, whatever that meant. But he instead decided to indulge, and the next game he committed a bunch of errors, and they essentially just named him the food that he ate. So his name is Chicken Wolf. And his original name, his birth name was William von Winkle Wolf.
That's also a good name.
That's also a great name because he stuffed his face with stewed chicken the night before a game, so he is forever known as Chicken Wolf.
Oh my god! He is. Congratulations on being two animals, sir. All right. My first guy is another guy who will be kind of from the animal kingdom. So this guy is still active, actually. Both of my guys are still active. This fellow was born June 29th, 1993, in the baseball hotbed of San Pedro de Macari, Dominican Republic, home of guys like Sammy Sosa. I believe Robinson Cano is also from there. Whole bunch of Dominican talent from San Pedro de Macari, Pedro Martinez as well, I believe. And but unfortunately, I don't think he's going to have quite a stellar career as those guys, because he is so he's 21 years old and he hasn't made it out of the Dominican Summer League. He is the
that's sad.
Well, you know, he's living the dream, so keep fighting the good fight. Redacted. So he's in his second season with the Dominican Summer League Orioles affiliate. And he hit .222 with a .327 on base percentage and a .314 slugging percentage this year. So, I don't know, the outlook is not great for him. But at least he'll have his name, which is Yeridolfo Lizardo. Which just looks like Yeridolfo Lizardo.
Lizardo.
Man.
Yeah, I'll call him Lizardo.
Yeah. Okay, back to you, Matt F.
Okay, so my second guy does not have a very interesting first name, but it is his last name that made me laugh when I first saw it. He's actually a pretty accomplished player. He won 3 World Series and pitched Game 1 of 1906. And he's actually is second all-time as the oldest player to ever play. At 57 years old, when as a coach for the Washington Senators, he came back and played in one game and got one at-bat.
How'd you do?
He did nothing. His career began with the Louisville Colonels in 1918 and ended in that last at-bat game in 1933.
Wow. So and his that's name, pretty impressive.
Yeah. His name... is again he is a not interesting first name, his last name, because he is a style of music. He's Nick Alt Rock.
I hope that his walk up music is like Moonlight Sonata or something. Just to throw people off.
Alt Rock.
Killers.
I would definitely legally change my name to put a period in between Alt and Rock. Just to clarify.
That's a good one. All right, back to you, Matt P.
All right, my player was born in 1858 in Cincinnati. He played for the Red Stockings, the Nationals, you know, back when they were the Washington Nationals, like in 1884. He only played in one season. He played in six games. He had an OPS plus of one and negative 0.3 WAR, so he wasn't a very accomplished player. And he died in 1913, also in Cincinnati. His name, though, is interesting. His last name is someone who would consume books, and his first name is something you'd find in winter. So his and his picture is hilarious because it's just a picture of him. It's just a like a drawing of him. It's not an actual picture. His name is Icicle Reader.
He should have gone by Vanilla Ice.
There's no story like Chicken Wolf, but his name is Icicle Reader. His real name Icicle is Reader. Julius Edward Reader.
Icicle Reader sounds like a Norwegian folk tale.
Yeah,
it does.
But it's Reader like with two E's.
Okay. All right, my last player is another guy who, again, is... very young. He was born December 15th, 1994, in Puerto Rico. So he's 19 years old. He was drafted by the Giants in the 11th round of last year's draft from the Puerto Rico Baseball Academy. He had a good rookie year last year with the Giants. Well, not on the Giants, but in the rookie ball affiliate. 299, the 393 on base percentage. Then this year, he was on the short season A affiliate, Salem Kaiser Volcanoes, which is just a great team. And he hit 240, 373, 329. So he's an outfielder, but I don't know if the chances of him going far are great. But at least he has the brilliant name of Joan Shui Fargus.
Joan Shui.
Yep. Joan Shui Ali Fargus.
Mm.
Yep.
Yeah. I wouldn't want him to engage in doing like in like feng shui, because it would be like Gong Shui does feng shui.
Yeah. There. While we don't really see as many great names nowadays as we used to, there are still some pretty great names floating around in the low minors, and those are always my favorite.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So. That'll do it for our B-Ref segment. Now, I guess we'll move right along to the final segment, the Yankee and the Mitre of the Week. Matt F., your Yankee of the Week.
I'm going to give it to Tom Patances for breaking the single-season strikeout record for a reliever on the Yankees.
Yeah, that's fair. He's still doing things.
That was cool to see. Cool to watch this entire year.
Yeah. One of the few bright spots still left. And he's continued to do his thing tonight, so. Bravo. Alright, Matt P., your Yankee of the Week.
I will be giving mine to the eminent Chris Young.
It's fair.
For hitting three home runs in seven games.
And all three of the home runs are pretty big, too.
Yes, and a stolen base stealing home. I would like to look up... I'm going to look up... quickly what his win probability added is in just this brief period of time, and it is 1.34 in win probability added.
Not bad.
That's so, pretty good.
Well, helps that, like, you know, the three-run walk-off home run that went from, like, losing two to, like, winning.
Yeah. Yeah, and he only, that's his actually his highest mark of his career. Second highest mark of his career. The highest was in 2011, he had 2.57. But in terms of win probability, he can leave now. That's enough.
It's like, my work here is done. Okay. My Yankee of the Week will be Martin Prado, sort of in memory.
Martin Prado's appendix.
Yeah, I thought about naming Martin Prado's appendix as the Mitre of the Week, because, jeez. I mean, Martin Prado was one of the few bright spots left on this team. And over the past week, he had hit 421 with a 737 slugging percentage, So he was doing his job, and he's been pretty tremendous since coming over at the trade deadline. And he'll probably be a good piece to have for next year since he can play so many positions. But his season is over because his appendix is like, nah, you're done.
Yep.
Oh, well. Still, he's my Yankee of the Week. Okay, Matt F., your Mitre of the Week.
Third week running, it's Derek Jeter.
It's really too bad that he's going out like this, but yeah, when you go, over 26?
He didn't have... Yeah, he never hit, all week.
I don't want to do it, but he's just been so bad.
Yeah, today's hit was his first hit he had since Derek Jeter Day, which was on the 7th.
Yeah, that's...
Just painful.
Yeah.
I think he retired already.
He's like, yeah, I'm basically out. Well, maybe he might just be a Rays season ticket holder in the future.
Yes, he can't wait to go to the truck. He just knocks it down and builds a new park.
No, he just builds into the park next to it just to compete against it and gets more fans coming just to see him.
It's Derek Jeter Stadium.
Buy the Rays.
Yes.
Buy the Rays and build the stadium in the backyard of his house.
Yeah, he builds what's called Derek Jeter Stadium. It's just an exact replica of Yankee Stadium, and he just always has a retirement tour there.
St. Petersburg.
Yeah.
Okay. Matt P., your Mitre of the Week.
Mine is unfortunately Jacoby Ellsbury.
Yeah.
He had one hit the past 8 games.
Yeah, that's not so good.
No. He dropped half a win in a week.
Oof. What are you doing, Jacoby? Come back.
Yeah, he's weird. He has some weeks where he's you can't get him out, and then he has some weeks where he just doesn't get a hit at all.
Yep.
If we totaled who's appeared on most the most on both lists, I think it's probably him.
Probably.
I would have to agree.
Yeah, maybe I'll have to do a season-ending Yankee Mitre of the Week tally or something like that. Okay. My Mitre of the Week is Steven Drew, because he's just an absolute pain to watch at the plate right now. And he's been, for as great as all the cash moves have been at the trade deadline, you figure that there is going to be a bust in there, and oh man, has Steven Drew been a huge bust. Obviously, it's hindsight, and I don't blame him for making the trade, but, it couldn't have gone any worse. He's hitting 132, 212, 245 with the Yankees.
A 23 WRC plus. He's basically been Jose Molina at the plate. I don't think that the move was bad, at the time.
No.
That's the best way to evaluate. It wasn't I would not have expected him to be that bad.
No, never.
Not even close. And I don't think he'll be that bad next season, because, no one could just turn into that bad of a player overnight. But, yeah, it's still pretty ugly.
Here's something. Since so he has hit, the couple home runs. The last homer was on August 25th. Since then, he is 4-46.
Jesus.
That's 080. Ooh. That's an 087 batting average. Oof. Yeah. Not so hot. 307 OPS.
Yeah.
He's had 6 extra base hits since he got traded to the Yankees. Mm-hmm. Or 7.
Yeah. Oh well. Alas. But we're almost done with the season. And next week will be the last podcast of the season. Because the Yankees will end the year, I believe, next weekend. Not this weekend, but the weekend after, I guess. So,
Or the Yankees made the playoffs thanks to Steven Drew rally.
Yeah, Steven Drew is going to go 16-16 with 12 homers and 4 triples. It'll be great. So next week will be probably the last podcast of the season. That's how we'll treat that, I think. Or maybe we'll do the week after. Either way, we will be back podcasting next week. And then probably once we get into the off season, we'll probably do what I did last year with Tanya, Jason, and Greg, where we're only podcasting once every 2 weeks, as opposed to weeklies, since there will be less news to talk about. So,
unless there's like some serious action,
right? Otherwise, it'll just be like, so literally nothing happened this week.
Yeah, how about that snow?
Yankee signed Steve Jones to a
minor league contract.
Eli Whiteside.
Oh, yeah. Literally for 2 weeks.
In the offseason. Oh, my God. But that'll be the schedule once the offseason gets rolling. But for now, we'll be back next week, probably the week after as well. Please follow us on Twitter at Pinstripe Alley. Follow our GIFs account at PSA_GIFs. Follow me on Twitter at MearnsPSA. Follow Matt F. on Twitter at MattF15. Follow Matt Provenzano on Twitter at MattProv94. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PinstripeAlley. And please rate and review us on iTunes. It'd be great to have an idea of how we did this season. Did we bore you? Did we entertain you? Did we make you feel neither positive nor negative emotions, much like the 2014 Yankees? But
we just bobbed back and forth.
Yeah, never really got too good, never really got too bad. You know? But either way, any feedback would be good to hear. So, for Matt Provenzano and Matt Ferencik, this is Andrew Mearns. Have a good night.